Hello. And welcome.
No, it's weird when we say it quiet.
Just sort of the story.
I gave Max a complex.
I'm Janie.
No, she's not.
And I'm Max.
That's not true. No, we're starting again.
Welcome to Sort of the Story.
I'm Janie.
And I'm Max.
And this is the podcast where we tell each other stories like fairy tales and folk tales and mythology.
And also, you are here.
Welcome.
Welcome to the podcast.
Wow, welcome back, guys. Guess what today is?
Sunday.
It's my birthday week when you're listening to this.
Oh.
It's 9 days before my birthday in real time as we're recording it.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you know what I want for my birthday?
What?
I want us to get to 100 Apple Podcast reviews. We're at 84 right now.
Ooh.
It's doable.
It's doable.
So if you haven't rated and reviewed us, do it. Also, welcome to the podcast.
Give us 5 stars.
It's
this
my
podcast
birthday.
Is not for kids. It's not for kids. If you're a kid, stop listening. But also, fucking please, please get us to 100.
Today, in particular.
Janie asks for so little.
I ask for so little. I am almost positive that's not right. I'm almost positive I'm constantly asking for stuff.
Truly.
I have the personality of a raccoon reaching its little hands through, like, a fence to be like, grapes, please.
Good. I just want to sit in that for a second.
Spiritually, I am raccoon hands poking through your deck looking for grapes.
And hot dogs.
Yeah, anything really you want to pass along, I will take, mm-hmm. and thank you.
Gummy bears.
Oh, give me some gummy bears.
Mm-hmm.
And also, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. What's your spiritual self?
Well, you kind of took mine. But that's okay.
Max and I are 4 raccoon hands poking up through your deck asking for a 5-star review.
I want your watermelon rinds.
Max is like, watermelon rinds, I want 5-star review. One of us is a professional. You tell us which one.
If you have chocolate wrappers and you want to just drop them down there, I'll just chew on them. That's fine.
Max, you shouldn't tell them your business. We are.
Listen, I'm not classy.
Everyone, welcome to the podcast. I'm moving on, Max.
Oh, by the time this episode comes out, you'll have your birthday present that I got for you that I'm so excited about.
What is it?
I'm not going to tell you.
You could tell them.
No, I'm not
okay,
going to.
Okay, I'll... You guys,
no, because then you're going to edit
I'll
the podcast.
Leave and you go no, ahead
no,
and
no.
tell them.
No, no, no. I'll tell them on the next episode after you have it.
Okay.
Okay.
What if you got me a ladder? Now we have 2 ladders. His and her ladders.
Oh,
hers and hers ladders. Is that what you got me?
Yeah, that's what I got you.
Oh, good. Monogrammed hers and hers ladders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your ladder's a little bit shorter.
I mean, as it should be.
My green.
You're a little shorter. Max wants to make sure that I am always looking up to her.
Just remember your place is all I'm saying.
Guys, if you are like, wow, I'm having such a good time, I wish I could hear this, but pay the money for it. Guess what? You can by signing up for our Patreon. Max, tell them how to sign up for the Patreon.
Sure. You're going to go on the internet.
Yeah.
And you're going to go to this episode or any of our episodes. And you'll go down, scroll down to the show notes, which is where we talk about all of our sources and other stuff like that.
You don't have to go
and
on
you'll
the
see a link.
Internet for this.
You have to go on the internet.
It's just your podcast app that you're listening to.
Yeah, but that's
on
the internet.
Yeah, but you don't have to open
You need
up
access
a
to the
browser.
World Wide Web is what I'm saying. You have to be connected to the World Wide Web in order to pursue this.
Okay.
But you're going to go to the show notes for this episode and you're going to click on the link that starts with www.patreon.com. And then you're going to look at our offerings and you can select either the $3 tier.
Team Troll.
Which for $3 a month, you get access to our Discord, which is full of the loveliest human beings on the planet.
So good.
Just the best.
So good.
Just the best.
Guys, our Discord is the most supportive and quirky place on the internet.
Yeah, it's very fun, and you should join us for $3. Or if you have $7 that you're looking to burn.
Oh, my God.
First of all, what's that like?
You had a good month this year.
I have not had a good month this year.
Oh, I'm having the worst month this year of my life. This year. Financially speaking, I have no $7 to spare, but if you do, give it.
Yeah.
Raccoon hands out. Give me your
$7. Give me $7. And coffee grounds.
And that's on being a story baby, which is the name of that tier.
Yes. For $7 a month, you get access to the Discord. Plus, you get a whole bonus episode every month, full-length episode of the podcast, but it's a secret, and only our $7 Patreon subscribers get it. You also get access to the back catalog of bonus episodes, which there are 14 of them now.
And most of the time, you get them a day early.
Most of the time,
this is when I accidentally forget to upload them to Patreon. Oh, but yeah. Most of the time, you'll get access to our regular episodes a whole day early. So you can lord it over your friends and be like, you haven't listened.
Oh my gosh. You can just like throw out some references and be like, you're going to think that's so funny tomorrow.
Oh, I just did a little inside joke. It's just between me, Janie, and Max.
And my $7 that I gave them on Patreon.
Yeah. Anyway, you could do that. And we would appreciate that as well.
Good job, Max.
Thanks, Janie.
We have a theme today.
We do have a theme. It's Janie's birthday, and she specifically requested that it be Shakespeare.
Because, once again, baby gave what baby wanted.
What it was Shakespeare.
William Shakespeare was born on April 23rd, which is my birthday, and he also died on April 23rd, which, you know,
is your birthday.
I'm just saying, in 80 years, if somebody wants to send an assassin to get me on my birthday.
That's actually what I got you for your birthday.
Oh my God!
A certificate for one assassination in 80 years.
You know me so well. I'm going to live so long.
Yeah.
Or.
Anyway.
Or they're just going to be shooting a gun into the earth.
Wow, how old is... Okay, anyway, so...
How old is what?
How old is the assassin? You had to get...
At least 80.
You had to get a baby assassin. Right now, they're just a toddler in a full tuxedo.
Yeah, and they are ready to watch the light leave someone's eyes.
Or at the very least, to shoot some dirt.
Let's shoot some dirt, boys.
So, in honor of our joint birthdays, I am once again... And because I was a theater nerd and I have an undergraduate degree in theater, I requested that we do another Shakespeare episode so we can do more Shakespeare.
Yeah, and now we're doing more Shakespeare.
Yeah.
This is the second Shakespeare episode.
Yeah. I really liked the last one. I thought it was very fun. It's one of my favorites. This one's going to... Last year, I did the origin of 10 Things I Hate About You, which is Taming of the Shrew, and Max did As You Like It, and I went back and re-listened to it a couple weeks ago, and it's hilarious. And this year, I'm going to take us way down, and we're going to learn all about King Lear.
And I'm going to tell the big bummer of a story that is Macbeth. So this episode's going to be not fun.
Oh my God, should I bleep out Macbeth every time you say it? And I'm going to tell beep.
I'm going to be retelling the Scottish play.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Guys,
Mackie's.
Mackie's. She's going to be retelling the story of Mackie D. Mackie B.
Mackie Mac.
Mackie Mac and the Brainy Bunch. So it's going to be a little bit of a different vibe, but it's still going to be fun. And you should still listen because it's my birthday.
Yeah. It's Janie's birthday. Are you going to turn off the episode on Janie's birthday?
How dare you? You know who'll know? God.
And Janie.
Have you ever seen us in the same room?
I haven't.
That's all I'm telling you. Okay. Let's get started then.
Okay.
Okay. Guys, I'll be right back with a story. Bye.
Okay, Max.
Okay, Janie. I'm really excited about this. I've never seen or read or known anything about King Lear.
So when I lived in New York, which I was from 18 to 20, I lived in New York, and I got to go see Derek Jacobi, who's just a phenomenal classical actor. And he played King Lear on Broadway, or maybe off-Broadway. I can't imagine he'd do it off-Broadway. Anyway, I got to see Derek Jacobi, an amazing actor, play King Lear. And it was one of the best performances I've ever seen in my life. But also, it was the first time that Shakespeare really genuinely connected with me outside of adaptations, like 10 Things I Hate About You, which actually does genuinely connect with people. And it's a really excellent way of introducing Shakespeare. But the way that he performed this has stayed with me my entire life. I think about it all the time. And so I'm really excited to tell you about this right now. And just a little bit of a content warning for violence and eyeball stuff and also dementia and some bummer topics. But I promise it's fun. Please don't turn it off.
It's Judy's birthday. You can't turn it off.
Don't turn it off. Stay with me. Okay. Max, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. King Lear. So King Lear is an old man. Okay. I think white hair, distinguished. Retiring age, okay? Mm-hmm. He has three daughters. Their names are Goneril, Regan, and Cordelia.
Reagan as a girl's name feels so modern.
Yeah.
And gonorrhoea is hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only one other word that starts that way.
Yeah, gone girl.
No.
I'm just kidding, it's gonorrhea. Okay, Reagan, gonorrhoea, and Cordelia. Cordelia is the youngest, and she's his favorite. She's the sweetest, and he's very open about how she's his favorite child. And one day, he gathers everybody around, like all of his court and his daughters and like his guards and stuff, and he makes an announcement. He says he's retiring from being king, and he's decided to divide his kingdom into three parts and give each of his daughters' families, basically, a piece of the kingdom to rule together, but as three, right? Goneril and Reagan are both married. Goneril is married to the Duke of Albany, and Reagan is married to the Duke of Cornwall. So their lives are all set. Cordelia is not married yet, but she has two really high-powered suitors who have been, like, kind of sniffing after her. And so he's like, she's going to get married really soon, so this is a really good time for me to do this and set you guys up for life, basically. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's not giving up the title of king. He's still going to be king in title, but they can have literally everything else. And he's also said his only other request was, because he's like, my kids are going to take care of me. My only other request is that I have 100 soldiers to be in my personal entourage, basically. But other than that, everything is yours. You can have the titles, you can have the money, you can have the power. I trust you guys to run my kingdom. So he makes this big announcement, right? And everybody's like, wow, that's unprecedented. And okay. And he turns to his daughters and he's like, I'm going to decide who's going to get the biggest portion. I've already decided who you're going to get. But why don't you guys, like, right now, all three of my daughters, tell me how much you love me. Tell me what I mean to you. Like, he's just like, blow smoke up my ass. Thank you. So Goneril steps forward immediately and she says, sir, I do love you more than words can wield the matter. Dearer than eyesight, space, and liberty. Beyond what can be valued, rich or rare. No less than life with grace, health, beauty, honor. As much as a child ever loved her father. Found a love that makes breath poor and speech unable. Beyond all manner of so much I love you. And she's like crying at the end, just like wiping away tears. And she's like, oh my God, nobody's ever loved anybody as much as I love you. And King Lear is like, here's your piece of the kingdom. Good job telling me I'm great. And Reagan speaks next. And she's like, ditto. Also what she said. But also, I love you so much that I hate everyone else. And he's like, big piece of kingdom for you. Enjoy that. Love that. And then he turns to Cordelia, his favorite child, the apple of his eye. And he's like, what do you have to say say for me? Everybody listen to this. Hold on. Cordelia is really going to take down the house. She's brilliant and sweet and she loves me so much. Go ahead. Blow your sisters out of the water. And she says, oh, I don't have anything to add or say. And there's like an awkward silence. And he's like, oh, what? And he laughs after a minute and he's like, no, surely you don't have nothing to say. He's like, say how you feel. Like, just tell the truth. And she says, I love you like you are my father and I am your daughter. I don't love you more than that. I love you a whole lot, but it's a normal amount of love.
Yeah.
And Lear is getting annoyed. And he's like, listen, if you don't start kissing ass, you're about to lose a lot of what I'm offering here. Stop being ungrateful and explain yourself. And she's like, I would love to explain myself. My sisters are full of shit. So both of her sisters claimed that the only person in this whole wide world that they loved was their father. But she's like, but they're both married and they're going to have children one day. And it's weird to love your father more than you love your husband or your children. I'm not going to promise that because that's weird. You shouldn't want that for us. And she's like, also, she's like, and also it's not true. That's not true. I love you too much to lie to you. I love you so much, but I'm not going to top the bullshit they're spewing out there.
Damn. Really setting some healthy boundaries there.
Oh, 100%. And she's very well spoken. But he's getting so mad. And she's trying to explain it in a kind way. And he's just, like, not having it. So he throws a royal tantrum. He disowned Cordelia then and there. He tells everyone who listened that she had been his favorite. And now she's ripping his heart out of his chest. And why don't you just kill me? since you hate me, and you'll be sorry when I drop dead. She's really laying it on. Mm-hmm. And then he tells his sons-in-law, Cornwall and Albany, he says, divide her portion of the kingdom between you. She doesn't get anything. I'm ripping her of her inheritance. She's no longer my daughter. And he's like, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend 1 month with one of you, and then I'm going to come live with the other one of you for another month, and that's how I'm going to do this. And at this point, he gives them his crown to split between them somehow, and then he leaves angrily. Right after he does this, he, like, doubles down. Everyone's like, oh, maybe he'll cool off. And he calls the King of France and Lord Burgundy. These are the two men that were vying for her hand in marriage. And he's like, who wants her? Literally, either of you can have her, but just so you know, I'm not giving a dowry. So you take her as is. She's worthless to me.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. And he's like, if you don't want her, leave her here. I don't fucking care. I don't care what happens to her, but this is your chance. Take her if you want her. And the King of France starts protesting. He's like, hey, that's really fucking harsh. Like, what the hell? And he's like, Cordelia could not have earned this reaction unless for some reason she went on, like, a mass murder spree, which is unlikely. Like, what? And he's like, or maybe you were lying before when you said you loved her. That's the only explanation for how you're acting right now. Either you were lying before, or she's murdered a bunch of children in an orphanage in a particularly heinous way. And at this point, Cordelia's like, Dad, please tell the truth. She says she was someone who showed her true nature through her actions, and she wouldn't lie to his face the way her sisters did. And she also was like, words don't come easily to me. I don't talk a whole lot. You know this. She's always been very shy. But she's like, but I told the truth. And that, you may not see it right now, but that makes me a better person. That makes me somebody you can trust. So please don't lie and tell them that I did something terrible, because I didn't. And Lear is like, well, I wish you had never been born. How about that?
Jesus Christ.
Okay, keep in mind, this tantrum is blown way out. He's blowing things way out of proportion. Yeah. I do think that it's worth noting for later. So at this point, the King of France steps in and is like, hey, you're mad that she's a little shy and she wouldn't kiss your ass in front of everyone? Like, that doesn't, that's not right. And he turns to Burgundy and he's like, are you still going to marry her? Are you still wanting her hand in marriage? And he also says, she herself alone is worth the price of the dowry. Like, she has proven her character. Do you still want to vie for her hand? And Burgundy turns to the king and says, just give me the dowry you originally promised and I'll take her away and you'll never have to see her again.
What a piece of shit.
Yes. So Lear is like, no, I'm not going to do that. She's worth nothing. And Burgundy turns to Cordelia and says, like, well, you lost the king as your father, so you lost me as a husband. Sucks to suck. I'm really sorry about this. If you decide to get rich again, call me.
Later, hater.
Later. And then he skateboards away.
Lord Burgundy is cool as fuck.
Why is he so cool? The King of France, however, turns to Cordelia and he's like, I'm proud of you. That took a lot of courage. And that was worth more to me than any money. You're loyal and you're strong and you're smart and everything you said made sense. You would be a really good ruler. You're proving yourself. And I'm really sorry this is happening to you. And so he turns to King Lear and he's like, I'll take her as is. She's going to be the Queen of France. And you suck. And we're not friends anymore. And Lear walks out with one last hateful, like, I hope you die. And he weeps.
That's wild. Also, though, like, the title of lord doesn't necessarily come with, like, a salary or anything.
That's
like that.
That's true.
So I would, like, Burgundy, it is easier for a king to be like, I don't care about the money.
You're absolutely right. I didn't think about that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This also did, though, set her up with somebody that was going to really value her and not just, like, take her on as, like, arm candy or, like, as, like, a prize, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, there's a silver lining to this for her.
Yeah, honestly, this probably worked out.
Yeah.
Like, it did force them to show their true colors. So yeah. She's probably
and she's situation. The type of person that cares about that a lot. Yes. So before she leaves the castle with her new husband, Cordelia turns to her sisters and she's like, I need you to promise me you're going to keep true to your word. I know that was bullshit, but you have to take care of our dad. He's so old. Like, he's so old now.
He's so old.
Oh, God, he's gross.
He's so old.
He's got that gunk in the corner of his mouth, you know.
You're going to have to use those tiny scissors and clip his ear hairs.
Oh, my God, his ear hairs, guys, please.
And his nose hairs.
Take care of his eyebrow, all the hairs. He's so hairy now.
And he smells so weird.
Well, not, like, bad, but, like, decrepit. Okay.
He smells like
medicine.
Dust and furniture polish.
And medicine.
And like mold.
How does he smell so moldy? And every year his pants get higher and higher. They're the same pants. Is he getting smaller somehow? Okay, so she tells all of this to her sisters. That's an exact quote. We were doing the dialogue. But her sisters basically spat at her and were like, mind your fucking business. You're not even our sister anymore. So sucks to suck.
Wow, everyone in this sucks. They so
also,
far.
Yes, the sisters also are like, have fun. The King of France is marrying you out of charity and he's going to show his true colors later. So have fun. And Cordelia leaves in tears. She goes to France. They're in Britain. Okay, so act two. The Earl of Gloucester, who is in Lear's court, right? And he's a very good, like, friend of King Lear. He has two sons. So we're going to see two parallel stories running at the same time, okay? Mm-hmm. They're going to cross a bunch, but this one is the Earl of Gloucester, who has two sons. The younger son is a bastard in that...
He's a real son of a bitch.
Yes. And also, he was conceived with a sex worker. And they are not respectful of that at all. Gloucester's like, I sure had fun making him, but what an illegitimate piece of trash. It's like, damn. Whoa, whoa. All right. He raised the boy, and he is now a respectable man, right? Like, his name is Edmund. But Gloucester constantly introduces him to people as the son of a whore I once had sex with.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Even though Edmund is extremely intelligent, and he has been given the best education, and he's... very capable, and he's a great sword fighter, all the stuff, but he's still just the bastard son of the Earl of Gloucester. So Gloucester's other son, Edgar, is legitimate. And so when Gloucester dies, Edgar is going to inherit everything, and Edmund will have nothing. He doesn't get a single one of the inheritance. So he's been raised rich, but he's not rich, mm-hmm. and he's out of luck when his dad dies, unless Edgar takes care of him.
Mm-hmm. That's one of those weird things also where... the only other way for him to be, like, well off is to marry a wealthy woman.
Yes.
Which is weird, because that means that you spend most of your, like, adult life before, like...
Yes.
Knowing that your dad could die at any time, being like, ooh, I hope I can convince somebody to marry me between now and when my dad dies.
Even though I don't come with anything official.
Yes.
Yeah. So obviously this feels very unfair to Edmund, and he begins to hatch a plan for how he's going to steal his brother's inheritance. So this isn't like a scrappy underdog. He's a real asshole.
Oh, damn.
I know. He begins by pretending to hastily hide a letter he's reading when his father walks into the room. Stage one of his plan, pretend like, oh, my dad's coming in. I better hide this letter.
Acting super suspicious.
Makes all this thing. And he tries to fold it. It's the size of a map for some reason. Gloucester walks in and he's like, what were you reading? Why are you hiding it? And Edmund's like, What letter? Ooh, you say who is reading... Who? Moi? No. Nothing? And he, like, is still folding it behind his back. And Gloucester's like, I didn't say letter. Is that a letter? What's it say? And he's like, say? For who? And so at one point he's like, it's from Edgar, but it's bad. You'll hate it. You shouldn't read it. Edgar said, you know, I mustn't betray my brother's confidence. It's so bad, you'll definitely hate it. And Gloucester's like, yeah, I think I'd like to read it. And so he takes the letter from Edgar, in quotation marks, and it says that he's basically, like, waiting for our parents to die of, like, old age is a real drag. I hate that. If we want to be cool and rich, Edmund, you should kill our father.
Whoa.
What? And he's like, and I'll promise, as a reward for your murder, I'm going to share my inheritance with you.
Damn.
So Gloucester immediately is like, what? How dare he? My favorite son said what? No questions asked. And he's like, guards, bring Edgar to me right now. But Edmund's like, no, Papa, you mustn't. Our Edgar will never do this, okay? He's probably testing my loyalty to see my reaction for this so-called plan. Like, no, no, no. I'm sure it's a mistake and a misunderstanding. Please, I'll figure out what's going on. And he basically says, tonight, I'll have a conversation with him and ask him outright. And if you want, you can spy through the wall hole. You know, the wall hole. The hole in the wall. The famous Gloucester wall hole.
Where I was conceived.
There's a hole in the wall where the kids all have a ball. The place of my birth. Anyway.
What?
He was born through the wall.
Oh, no.
So
the wall hole. He's real narrow.
The wall hole is his mom.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So Gloucester's like, okay, fine. If we can visit the wall hole, then yes, I agree to this plan. I only make a big deal about the wall hole because they gloss over it as if it's just like a normal thing. And I'm like, there's not usually just a hole in the wall. What's that for?
For listening.
For looking and listening.
Scheming.
Yeah. So Gloucester points out that there have been solar and lunar eclipses in Britain recently, which is just like here.
Oh my God.
I know.
That's so crazy.
And these are bad omens for Britain. Oh, I know.
No. He says, bad omens for Britain? That could be okay.
That could be fine. You know, it's unclear. We'll wait and see. So he basically is like, look what happened to Lear and his daughters. Like, everything's kind of falling apart. Things are getting really bad here recently. And so he leaves kind of muttering, and Edmund chuckles darkly, quietly at first, and then getting louder and building in intensity until it's a full guffaw. And he says, an admirable evasion of whoremaster man to lay his goatish disposition on the charge of a star. Basically, he's like, astrology is bullshit. And then he says, my father compounded with my mother under the dragon's tail, and my nativity was under Ursa Major, so that it follows I am rough and lecherous. But I should have been that I am had I the maidenliest star in the firmament twinkling of my bastardizing. Basically, he's like, I would have been a dick no matter what my star sign was. Ha ha! I'm a Scorpio now, but if I had been a Taurus, I'd still be a dick.
And also, astrology isn't real.
And astrology isn't real anyway, or it's a major ha ha ha. He calls Edgar in and asks him when the last time he saw their father was. And Edgar is like, I don't know, a little while ago. Why? And he's like, well, I'm only asking because I just saw him and he was like really mad at you. Like, what happened? And Edgar's like, Dad was mad at me? Edgar?
The best boy?
I'm the best one. And he's like, someone must have badmouthed me to him. But like, who would do that? And Edmund's like,
oh, who indeed?
Indeed. Probably a Taurus. You know I believe in that stuff. So Edmund tells him that he was thinking the same thing. He's like, somebody is definitely trying to like badmouth you and take you down. And he's like, I'm so worried that you maybe have enemies that want to kill you. And he's like, listen, I think you should start carrying your sword with you everywhere. Like, you're not safe, okay? And you look a little sick. Are you sick? Oh my God. Like, you look pale. And Edgar's like, oh no, am I sick? I have enemies? Since when? Edgar's a little bit suggestible. And Edmund is a dick.
Yeah.
So he's like, never travel alone. I care about you so much. And he's like, and here, you need to kind of hide out for a bit just in case you do have enemies who are trying to kill you. Okay? And he's like, okay. And he's like, here, take my keys. Stay at my place. Okay? You'll be safe there. And when the time is right, I'm going to walk with you so that you could talk to our father and I'll help mediate. Okay? And Edgar's like, okay, thank you. And he's like, yeah, get the fuck out of here now. Go on. Go hide. And so when Edgar leaves, thanking his brother, Edmund chuckles darkly, quiet at first, but growing in volume and intensity over how lucky he is that his father and brother are both fucking idiots who he can trick easily and with very little effort.
I love that this Shakespeare play includes like a villainous laugh.
I mean, I say that. That's my thing. But it does.
But it
does.
That's
canon. He says he's going to get his rightful inheritance easier than anyone would ever think. And then he does his laughing. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, back with Lear. I'm going to say meanwhile a bit, okay? So if you want to play a drinking game, just know I know. And I'll drink with you. Meanwhile, back with Lear, he is staying with Goneril, his oldest daughter. And he's a lousy house guest, okay? First of all, he has 100 knights. And we've said this before in other folktales. 100 knights is a lot of knights. That's too much knights, okay? And they are rowdy and they're a little bit rude. And Lear smacked one of her servants, whose name is Oswald. It's like her...
manservant?
Yeah, it's her personal messenger. He smacked her servant in the face because her servant was being a little mean to his fool. And I can't tell what side I'm on for that one. Don't smack the help, but also don't be mean to the fool.
But also, the fool is there to be mean to.
Not to smack.
Not to smack, but the person didn't smack him.
Oh, that's true. He was just being rude to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. Well, you know what? No, Lear gets to be mean to him, but some random fucking servant doesn't.
Why not?
I don't know. anyway.
It just feels like it would be more fun if he let everyone be mean to the fool.
Well, maybe that's just his fool to be mean to.
Maybe he has a second one for public use.
This is the public fool. This is my private fool. Personal fool. She instructs her, I want a shirt that just says personal fool.
I want a shirt that says public fool.
And we'll walk around town. And they'll have arrows pointing at each other.
Aw.
Cute. She instructs her staff to be super rude to him. Goneril does. She's like, okay, neglect all his needs, be really mean to him, and make it so bad for him here that he fucking leaves. I don't want my dad here anymore. She never wanted him there in the first place. Yeah. Now she has power. She really does not want to take care of this old man. She's like, if he wants to act like this, then he can pay the fucking consequences. She mentions that in his old age, he's becoming like a baby again. And so he can easily be manipulated. She's been clocking some decline in his mental state already. Mm-hmm. And she's like, so he deserves this, actually. And I'm going to be really, really mean to him.
What?
I know. After a couple days of this, he decides to leave early to stay with Reagan. And he's like, I'm going to get treated how I'm supposed to be treated with Reagan. Right? Mm-hmm. That's his plan. Lear is out of control. He's treating everybody terribly. More so when he starts getting neglected. That actually makes his behavior a lot worse.
As happens.
Eventually, his fool quits, makes a big speech. He's like, and here I go, and I'm going to quit, and I'm leaving now, and you'll never see me again, and you're going to miss old fool, and looking around for a fool.
I'm nobody's fool.
And everyone's like, that speech didn't mean anything. That amounted to nothing. And the fool says, you know what else amounts to nothing? Your income, because you gave it away to your terrible daughters. Bazinga.
I really like that Shakespeare also has the first recorded use of the word bazinga.
That is true. He also chastises Lear for sending his only good daughter, Cordelia, away. The fool can say, by the way, this is true of just like the jesters and stuff. They got away with saying what nobody else could say to kings because that was their job.
There's a literal term that's jester's privilege or fool's privilege.
Yes.
Yeah. For like the fact that the only person who can actually talk shit to a leader's face is the person that is, like, there for their entertainment,
yeah,
kind of.
And this fool straight up is like, you want to know what a joke is? You gave away all your power to evil kids, and you chased away the only loyal kid you had. Like, ha ha, good one.
And also in the process made yourself the enemy of the King of France.
100%. And so he calls King Lear the fool. He's like, you're the real fool here. It's not me. And King Lear is very mad about that. But the fool continues to absolutely dunk on him. He tells him that he's fucked up big time by basically bending over so his daughters could spank him. And he says, when thou clovest thy crown in the middle and gavest away both parts, thou borst thine ass on thy back o'er the dirt. And that just means like, you gave away your crown, and now you're being spanked. Yeah. It's hard to read those. The fool also tells him that he split his brain in two and gave the parts away to his daughters, essentially calling him brainless. I don't have to add all of this, but the fool is really getting some good roasts.
Damn.
Lear tells him that he could have him whipped for lying, and the fool counters that his daughter would whip him for telling the truth. How strange. Goneril comes in, and she's like, hey, your entourage is getting too rowdy, and you're not acting like you're supposed to be acting. You're king. Like, shape the fuck up. Like, what's wrong with you, dad? And this surprises Lear, because up until now, his kids had been kissing his ass, and all of a sudden, she just walks up and starts telling him that he's a piece of shit and that everybody's being terrible. And he's like, you're supposed to love me more than you love breathing. What's happening? Why are you being mean to Lear? Goneril is like, by the way, you don't need an entourage this big. I want to downsize it by a lot. She says the only ones that are going to be allowed to stay at her house will be those who are like him, old and quiet.
Oof.
Lear is like, you're being terrible. And they get into this fight that escalates until he decides to pack up and go to Reagan's house. He begins to think that compared to how terrible Goneril is, Cordelia's infraction actually wasn't that bad. But he isn't ready to like say it out loud to people yet. But he's like, oh no.
I might have goofed.
Right away, he's like, whoops, Cordelia might have been right. As he's leaving, Lear cries out to God to make Goneril barren, or better yet, give her a daughter that is just as terrible as she is. Her husband has come out to watch the show, and when he leaves, he asks her what happened, and Goneril tells him not to worry about it. She's like, it's nothing to concern yourself with. But as she's saying this, Lear storms back in to fight some more.
And another thing.
Because he found out that over the last 2 weeks, she's dismissed
50 of his nights.
Holy shit.
He had one fucking request, and it was 100 nights, and she's downsized by half. And he basically is like, I'm leaving. That's so shitty. And I'm going to be treated better by Reagan. And we're going to hate you together. Goodbye. And he leaves with his 50 nights. When her father is finally gone, Goneril is like, can you believe that guy? And her husband's like, well. And she's like, shh, shh, shh. I don't care what you have to say. She's like, we can't give in to Lear. I know that looked harsh, but we can't just like give in to his demands. He's old and he's senile and he's stupid and he needs to be like knocked down a couple pegs. And she's like, we have to put our foot down because we're in control now and he needs to know that. And so she sends a servant with a letter, her servant Oswald. She sends a servant with a letter for her sister. And basically the letter is like, Reagan, this is what happened. And she adds a couple juicy details that maybe didn't happen. And she's like, don't give in to any of his demands. It'll make me look bad. And, you know, take my side and don't take our dad's side, basically. As he's going to Reagan's home, Lear starts thinking about Cordelia and he realizes he misses her a lot. And he already regrets what he said. And he's like, why did I do that? Like, that was really rough of me. Like, my pride has gotten the better of me. And he very quietly says, I did her wrong. Just outright, he says it to himself. He tells his fool, who is still riding with him.
His fool. What?
I know.
He's like, I quit, but I'm not going to leave you alone.
Well, what made me laugh was after that whole speech and that whole fight, when they were like, that amounted to nothing. It did amount to nothing. The fool didn't actually quit.
That's really funny. Mm.
Which makes me wonder if the fool is constantly quitting. Nobody believes you. Yeah.
Good.
As they ride, the fool tells him that he's acting like a crazy old man, not like a wise old man like he should be acting. And he's like, you need to buck up. And at this, Lear starts to get worried. And he says, oh, let me not be mad. Not mad, sweet heaven. Keep me in temper. I would not be mad. So he's like, oh no, am I going crazy? And the fool's like, Yeah, bitch. You're acting crazy.
Also, I quit.
You'll be sorry when I'm dead. Meanwhile, naughty little Edmund the Bastard. Not my words. Shakespeare's words.
Really?
No, but that's basically how he describes them. Edmund gets news that Reagan and her husband are coming to visit Gloucester. So they're going to spend actually a lot of time at Gloucester's house. There's two locations. One is anywhere Lear is, and then the other one is at Gloucester's house. Okay. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Reagan's husband, the Duke of Cornwall, and Goneril's husband, the Duke of Albany, are kind of in a little bit of a tiff. They're arguing back and forth. There's strife, like a little civil war is brewing amongst the sisters, kind of. Hmm. Edmund is like, I can probably use this. Let me think.
And then he does an evil laugh.
Because laughing like that hurts. Okay.
Classic
as he's coughing, Edgar walks in and Edmund tells him that he's been found out and he has to move. Oh no. Nothing's happened. Like he's just been sitting in the same room and Edgar's like, hey, do you have any milk in here? And he's like, you have to leave. Everyone's trying to kill you. And he's like, ah, fuck. Again? As Edgar is, like, getting ready to run, he's like, okay, where should I go? And he's like, who cares? Get out. But as he's getting ready to leave, Edmund hears his father coming, and he's like, you know what we should do? We should start fake sword fighting so it doesn't look like we're in cahoots, okay? I'm going to try to figure it all out, but, like, just so they don't think we're working together, so I'm more credible when I back you up, what if we pretend to sword fight? And Edgar's like, okay, if you think that'll help. And so they slap each other's swords a bit, and then Edgar runs off. Before Gloucester and his men come fully into the room, Edmund cuts himself to make it look like that dastardly Edgar, who used to be Daddy's favorite, but no more. to make it look like he tried to kill him. And so as he's sitting there bleeding, he tells his father that it's because he refused to help him murder their beloved father. Edgar is mad, I tell you, mad! And Gloucester's like, oh my god, we have to stop this monster. This is so weird. He never gave any indication, but I guess he's evil now. And he sends some soldiers to go capture him. Regan and Cornwall arrive at the house, and they tell Gloucester that she's received letters from Goneril and King Lear, each complaining about each other. So King Lear also sent a letter. And Regan's like, I need your advice on what to fucking do about this. Because he's saying she's terrible and she's mean and I hate her. And she's saying he's awful and he's senile and let's hate him together.
She's like, what do I do? And Gloucester is like, well, we have to take care of King Lear. Like, we need to make sure that he knows he's still respected, that he still has a place in this kingdom. And so, like, he's his friend, right? And he's also another older man. So he has a lot of sympathy for Lear. But also, it's becoming very clear that Regan and Cornwall care about their own power more than they care about his life. And so he's, like, kind of like, how do I proceed with making sure that he's cared for and also kind of stoking the egos of these terrible children, right? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Edgar is surviving the manhunt, okay? That's after him. We're going to go around to a couple places. He's hid in a tree all night, all right? Mm. When he gets down, he's like, I have to hide. And so he decides to disguise himself.
And then he goes up the tree.
Back up the tree. He decides to disguise himself as a beggar named Poor Tom. And he does this by getting almost completely naked and covering himself in mud. And he's like, I'm Poor Tom. And then he starts babbling and he just walks off stage. Edgar, you need to ask more questions. But now Edgar's going to be Poor Tom. Just remember that. And he's going to spew some nonsense. And I'm not going to read a single thing because it's the weirdest things I've ever read. And it's like a million tongue twisters. It's really weird.
Okay, so Lear makes it to Regan's house, but she and Cornwall aren't there. He wanders the town with a few men he has left in his entourage, and he learns that his messenger he had sent his letter with, he has this, like, trusted messenger that he actually fired before, and that messenger was, like, his name is Kent. I'm only explaining this now because I don't really focus on him, but Kent was his loyal, like, servant for a very long time, and he loves Lear, and Lear, when he pushed Cordelia out, he fired Kent. And Kent was like, you can fire me, but I'm not fucking leaving. And so then he disguised himself as another messenger. And nobody recognized him. His name is Caius.
His name's Poor Tom.
His name is Poor Caius. So he had sent his messenger with his letter, right, to Regan. And Regan put him in the stocks.
Oh.
Yeah. So as Lear is, he starts to wander around the town looking for his daughter. And he finds his messenger in the stocks. And he's like, that's a huge disrespect. Like, what the hell? And so he goes to Gloucester's house and he's like, I'm here to talk to my daughter and her husband. Because clearly there's some sort of fucking misunderstanding here. But they refuse to come out and talk to him at first. They keep sending Gloucester out to be like, they say that they're too sick to come out. Yeah, they're doing this weird fake cough. And it's infuriating and it's an obvious lie. And Gloucester feels really awkward. He's like, I'm really sorry. I don't know. They're saying that they're not going to come up. And so Lear is like, I'm going to break the goddamn door down if they don't come out right now. And Regan comes out and is like, Daddy! Oh my God, I'm so happy to see you. I didn't know you were here. And it's like a really weird, like, yeah, he's like, what? And so he's like, listen, I'm here to complain about Goneril. But Regan's like, you're old and feeble. Go back and apologize to her so she can take care of you. Like, immediately. And this is ludicrous to him, but he doesn't see it as an insult at first. He's like, you just don't understand. So he's in the middle of telling Regan that she's so much better than her sister and he only has one child left when a horn sounds. Goneril has arrived at Gloucester's house.
A word?
She comes in and Lyra's like, that bitch! No, Regan! Can you believe she's over here to talk to us? And he turns around and Regan is already going over there and she, like, takes Goneril's hands and Lear's like, betrayal. What? So he and Goneril get into a fight. She calls him old and he calls her a disease. He tells her that he and his 100 men, which I assume he's, like, trying to hire them back. He's like, we're going to stay with Regan. Regan will let me have my 100 knights. And Regan's like, I agree with Goneril. 100 knights is too much. And she's like, actually, 50 knights is too much. And Goneril's like, yeah, if they want to stay here, you probably have to downsize to what, 25? And Regan's like, I'd say 25. 25 knights. That's enough. You know what, actually? You don't need any knights. What do you need knights for? So maybe zero. Nobody. You don't get anybody. Maybe it's just you and you can stop being such a burden. And both sisters. And he's like, what the fuck? And Reagan's like now spewing some nonsense. And he's like, I'm going back with Goneril.
What?
He's like, fuck. Lear says, no, you unnatural hags. I will have such revenges on you both that all the world shall. I will do such things. What they are not, I know not. I'm going to do something. happen? He says, what they are yet, I know not, but they shall be the terrors of the earth.
Why I oughta.
I just love the actual quote is, know you unnatural hags, I will have such revenges on you both that all the world shall, I will do such things, what they are, I don't know. That's the literal line. Thunder sounds in the distance, and he's like, I'm not gonna cry in front of you. I bet you think I'm gonna cry, but I won't cry in front of you. You don't deserve it. And he says, in order for me to cry, my heart would have to break into a million pieces, but it won't, and I'm not gonna cry. He makes this big speech, but he's not gonna cry. And then he runs off into the storm, because there's like all this thunder is brewing, and he tells his fool as they're running, he's like, I feel like I'm going crazy. And the fool's like, you are. Where are we going? Why am I following?
Oh, the fool is a figment of his imagination the whole time.
Nobody else sees the fool.
Oh, no.
Gloucester follows him out of his house, right? He walks off stage with him. Goneril and Regan talk about what a pity it is that their dad won't accept their generous offer. And they're like, we'll gladly take him out of the rain. Like, it's so unsafe for, like, an old man to be out there in the storm like this. But we're not going to take a single one of his followers. So, like, I guess he just has to stay out there and learn his lesson.
Jesus.
So the rain starts to pour down really hard, and Gloucester comes back and is like, Lear ordered a horse, but he doesn't seem to know where he's going. He just got on a horse and got some for his fool, and then he left. So I don't know where he is. And he's like, also, out there are no trees for cover for miles. It's just, like, barren land. And so, like, we need to go get him. But Regan and Goneril are like, no, he can take care of himself. He's an adult, and he made this decision. So, like, yeah, he can take care of himself. And then they start pressuring Gloucester to lock the doors against him. So if he does try to come back, he can't get in. And they're like, Lear is on his own with his men. I don't know if all his men followed him. So soon after this, we see Lear. We see where he is. Lear is still out in the wild. The only person with him is his fool, who is trying to stave off his madness with jokes.
Aw.
But it's not working.
I am constantly a fool who is trying to stave off madness with jokes.
Yeah, for me. And it doesn't work.
I'm bad at my job.
Albany and Cornwall are on the verge of a civil war. So several days have passed, okay? Mm-hmm. Albany and Cornwall are on the verge of a civil war, and they're trying to keep it under wraps. France has been sending spies, and they're quietly preparing an army. Because Cordelia's like, I'm going to fucking figure out what's going on. Lear's messenger, Kent in disguise, gives a man all his money to deliver a message to Cordelia to tell her the truth about her father's ill treatment. And he's like, she needs to know exactly what's happening. So he's trying, like, all of his money. Like, he's, like, trying his hardest. Act 3, Scene 2 opens on King Lear. White-haired, looking shabby, standing in the middle of a raging storm. The storm has been going for days, and he's screaming into the sky. And his fool, who's really worried, is like, can we please go back to your daughters? Can you say sorry? I feel like we are at the point where you could just go back and say sorry. But Lear's like, no! I'm in the rain!
What's that one Simpsons meme where it's like, old man screams at cloud or whatever it is. There's like a newspaper cover.
That's Lear. Old man screams at cloud. Lear says he never gave the weather a piece of his kingdom, so the weather doesn't owe him anything. But his daughters are ungrateful and terrible. So he's like, I'll stay in the weather. It's okay if it's treating me bad because it doesn't owe me anything. But those ungrateful kids owe me a lot of things and they're treating me bad. So I stay here with my new daughter, the weather. The messenger / Kent finds them, and he begs King Lear to find shelter as well. He's like, hey, the fool is right. It's time. We need to get you out of the rain. It's been days. You're going to get really sick. And he's like, he also says this is the worst storm he's ever seen. So things are dire. But Lear is still screaming into the storm. He's working himself up into this sick little fury. And so Kent manages to pull him into a hovel out of the rain, and he decides to leave Lear to rest in the hovel while he goes back and begs Goneril and Regan to take their father back, right? He's like, I'm going to do it for him. Clearly, he's out of his mind, and he needs somebody to help him. While he's gone, Lear starts to quietly say, like, I think I'm losing it. I think I'm going crazy. He says specifically, my wits begin to turn. And he asks the fool, he's like, are you cold? I'm cold. And the fool is like, oh, no. Yeah. And he tells him that he's sorry and that there's one part of his heart left that is still sorry for the fool.
Oh.
Back at the house, Gloucester tells Edmund all about how terrible Lear's daughters have been treating him, right? So Gloucester's like, oh my God, my son, my only good son left. This is crazy. They've also made a new rule that Gloucester can't even mention Lear's name around them or else.
Jesus.
I know. Gloucester's like his best friend, so he's like, what the fuck is happening? What's more, he's received a letter about fighting between Albany and Cornwall, which he has locked in his safe, right? And so he's telling Edmund all of this. He's like, I got this letter in my safe, and everybody's fighting, and I'm worried about Lear. But he also tells Edmund that someone is coming to help Lear. He knows this. He decides to break the sisters' orders by going out to find the old king, so he's also going to go out on foot and search for him. And he's like, I'm going to help him. I'm going to tell him everything that's going on. And so he leaves Tricky Edmund in charge of dealing with Regan and Cornwall. But he's like, be careful, son. Something strange is going on. I think we have a mole. And Edmund's like, what? Who could it be? I'll be very careful, father. You're so brave. And your secrets are safe to me. Kent and the fool, meanwhile, are trying to get Lear to take better shelter in a cave, right? They're like, the hovel is leaking and it's going to blow over. You need to go in this cave. But Lear is being difficult.
Oh.
He's telling them that now that he knows how hard it is to be without a home, he feels really guilty about not doing more for disadvantaged people in his kingdom. He's like, wow, it sucks being out here. Like, no food and no shelter. And I have never thought about this, but I went my whole career being a king and I never helped the poor. Like, they should have more help. We should set up, like, things for them, you know? Like, things where they have shelter in storms. Is that a thing? He's like, I should rectify that later. So they get him to the cave and the fool walks in to check it out and then runs back out. It's like, ah, there's a ghost in that cave. And he runs
a ghost?
Out. There's a ghost in that cave. It turns out Edgar, disguised as poor Tom, has been taking shelter.
A naked man covered in mud.
So Edgar decides to really play into the part of poor Tom. And he comes out begging and singing and he does a bunch of really weird things. But Lear is also getting worse by the minute. So now there's just two madmen just like raving at each other. and King Lear sees him and he's like monologuing made up Shakespeare words. And King Lear is like, are you homeless because your daughters took everything from you? And he's like, what? And Kent is like, this man has no daughters, Lear. Like, no, but Lear can't let it go. He's like fixated on the fact that he must be suffering because his daughters were terrible to him. Poor Tom is monologuing nonsense things to stay hidden, and Lear can't stop monologuing about how he can't like separate the two. At this point, Edgar slash poor Tom starts to rant about women in a really weird off-the-cuff way. Yeah. While he's doing this, Lear is staring at this nearly naked, like, shivering man, and he starts to talk about how clothing and social stature mean literally nothing. He's like, wow, it's all made up. These clothes don't mean anything. My crown didn't mean anything. We made that up. Words are made up. Titles and riches, there's no reason why I'm rich. There's no reason. That's so stupid. You live in a cave. And so then he starts to take off all his clothes.
Oh, no.
Okay, so Sir Ian McKellen, the great actor, played King Lear very famously.
Oh, God.
Yes.
That would be...
And he was incredible, apparently. But he got fully naked. And apparently that caused quite a stir. People were like, good for you! Yeah. Can you imagine having to see Sir Ian McKellen's penis? I don't know what I would do. I would be upset.
I'd start throwing money.
Oh, inappropriate for this play. He's like, money means nothing. And Max is throwing pennies at his dick. He's like, weird. Does this mean nothing? Okay, so the fool and Kent try to stop him from doing this. And at this point, Gloucester finds them in this cave and he's carrying a torch and he's brought some food. And Edgar goes further into character because he's like, oh, my dad's here. But he's covered in mud and he looks completely different now. And so he just starts like fully ranting and raving about random stuff like eating amphibians and cow dung.
Huh.
Yeah. Until Gloucester is like, weird. Just keep moving.
Can you go?
Ew.
Do you mind? We're in the middle of something here.
So he's like very concerned that King Lear, the king, is hanging out with this nutcase in this cave. He's like, he's talking about eating frogs and shit. Can we get you somewhere else?
He tries to talk to Lear, but Lear only wants to talk to poor Tom.
Oh, no.
He calls him a philosopher. And so he pulls Edgar / poor Tom to talk in private. And Gloucester tells Kent that he has a reason to go mad, that his daughters are plotting his death. He's like, listen, this is nothing. It's temporary. And it's because of stress. His daughters are literally trying to kill him now. So he finally convinces Lear to go with him, but the old man will only go if he can take poor Tom with him, because he loves him.
He's my new fool.
Yeah, so poor Tom, and the fool's like, the fuck? I quit!
And then he helps them all out of the cave.
Meanwhile, back at Gloucester's castle, Edmund is really ramping up his evil plans. He's going full Maleficent. He tells Cornwall all about how his father has snuck out to help King Lear behind his back. Right? Mm-hmm. And he shows him the letter his father had locked up in the safe, convincing him that Gloucester has been the spy this whole time. And he's like, this is so sad that I have to tell on my own dear father, but that's just how loyal I am to you. Like, you know, I just love you so much. And oh, I love my dad so much. So I am sad about this, but I'm a boy's boy. I'm here for you. Cornwall decides to find Gloucester and punish him. And afterwards, he's like, I'm going to make you the new Earl of Gloucester. And Edmund's like, I guess. It's going to be sad, but I do accept. Back with Lear. Gloucester has led Lear, Kent, poor Tom, and the fool to a little house outside of his castle to get dry. Kent tries to get King Lear to go to bed, but the old man is fully losing it. He is convinced that Regan and Goneril are in the room with him, and he makes everybody have a trial. He's like, you're the judge, and you're the judge. You're the judge. He literally is just, everybody's a judge. And he's like, and look at this woman. Isn't she terrible? Tell her how bad she is. And they're like, bad, gavel.
So everybody, so bad.
They have like a mock trial where all of the men in the room are like, oh, like awkwardly playing along. And King Lear is like, yeah, arrest her.
King Lear would like to call his second witness. Poor Tom!
And he's like, flippity gibbet.
I hate women.
Skibbity doo. I hate women, and what about you? Eventually, Edgar makes a comment that he feels so bad that he wants to cry. He like, because they do a lot of asides to the audience, and Edgar's like, it feels really bad pretending to be crazy next to somebody who's actually going crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so awkward for me. But I guess I have to keep going. So he keeps going. Gloucester comes back and tells Kent that he has prepared a litter to carry Lear far away. He's like, he needs to get out of here now. He says there's a plot against his life and they need to get to Dover as fast as they can. And so everybody except for Edgar, poor Tom, leave. At this point, Edgar is feeling a little bit better about his own situation. He's like, I think everything's going to be okay if I can just like talk to my dad and show him that I've been framed. I think that's all I have to do. So like, I just got to bide my time a little. In perspective, things aren't so bad for me. I may have gone a little hard with being naked in front of everyone I know. Meanwhile, Goneril, Regan, and Albany have been shown the letter proving Gloucester was helping Lear behind their back, and they're furious. They begin to talk about what the best punishment for him would be, and Regan is like, hang him instantly! And Goneril's like, pluck out his eyes! And Cornwall's like, no, I'll take care of him. Hey, girls! You came up with those answers too quick.
Women.
Women. He sends Edmund to escort Goneril back to her home. He's like, you walk her home, okay? I'll be there shortly, mine wife. And she's like, sure, I'll walk with Edmund. Bye. And then they walk off, like, alone and unsupervised. Interesting. And then they leave. As they exit, Gloucester is dragged in. He's been caught. He did get Lear away, but they caught him on the road. And they all know now that Lear is going to Dover. They don't know exactly where in Dover he's going. And Gloucester's like, you're all guests in my house. Why are you acting like this? Like, I didn't do anything wrong. You're really going crazy here. And Regan and Cornwall tie him to a chair. And she starts to, like, rip out some of his beard hairs. What? And he's like, ow! And also, ah!
Why?
why.
Yeah.
They berate him and they scream at him. They demand to know why he sent Lear to Dover, where he was going, what was he planning. But all Gloucester will say is that he did it to save Lear from his monstrous daughters. He says, quote, because I would not see thy cruel nails pluck out his poor old eyes, nor thy fierce sister in his anointed flesh stick boarish fangs. And then he tells them, but I shall see the winged vengeance overtake such children. To which Cornwall says, no, you won't. And tears out one of his eyeballs.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I didn't know how to warn you about that without, like, fully just ruining it. But they do this on stage. They have to have a visual stunt on stage where they scoop out an eyeball and throw it on the ground while Goneril laughs and claps and, like, runs around and is just, like, so excited.
Jesus Christ.
So you have to watch somebody lose their eye. And as he, like, does the scooping motion and he throws something that sounds like jelly on the floor, his actual eye has, like, makeup on it over it suddenly. Like, they do it all in real time. It's mm-hmm. very realistic and very upsetting. There are also servants in this room with Gloucester. So they have servants attending them. They're Gloucester servants. They're people that have served this guy his whole life. And they're also now stunned. They're watching him get tortured in real life. And he's just lost an eyeball in front of them. And they're all like, what the fuck? Oh my God.
Maybe these people are crazy.
I feel like they're not fully there. By the way, guys, I know I am going to put a trigger warning. I am using the word crazy and insane quite a bit, and that isn't cool to just throw out. I know that. But for this sort of play, I honestly can't, just personally, Janie, I can't think of any other way to talk about this play.
Yeah.
So I do apologize. I don't throw the word crazy, or I'm trying more and more not to throw the word crazy out in modern day. But for this particular play, it's a lot about, like, going mad and stuff. So yeah. Just I felt like I had to have to say that. I do need to find better ways of talking, but for the purpose of this play, there's just too much going on. So I'm going to continue using it, but I also know that that's not cool to say modern day about real life people.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do feel like a lot of this is like a mob mentality, like paranoia kind of.
Well, yeah. It's a lot of power. It's them striving for power and one-upping each other to the point where they have fully lost their humanity mm-hmm. and their sense of empathy.
Yeah. And it feels like it's also like, there's a line in my play, Macbeth.
Whoa. Spoily.
That effectively comes down to like, I've come this far. Like, why would I stop now?
Yeah.
It would be as hard to go back as it would be to go forward. But, and so it's kind of a lot of like, mm-hmm. they're being like, there's no way to deal with the situation except to continue escalating.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. At a certain point, you can't really take back your bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, but they're not introspective like this. They're enjoying the escalation.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. So as Gloucester is screaming because his eye has been plucked out.
Sure.
Regan tells her husband to take the other eye too. But before he can do that, one of Gloucester's servants rebels and takes a sword and, like, attacks Cornwall. He's like, I can't watch this happen. Like, what the hell? And so he does almost kill Cornwall. He gets, like, he stabs him. But as he's doing that, Regan comes up behind him and stabs him in the back and kills him. And then Cornwall digs out Gloucester's remaining eye,
ugh.
Blinding him completely. That was one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen. It looked so real, and they were laughing so hard. It's disgusting. Blind now, Gloucester calls out for Edmund's help, but Regan is like, you're calling for Edmund? He's the one who turned you in, you stupid old man.
Jesus.
At this point, Gloucester realizes not only has he been tricked, but Edgar was innocent this entire time, and he chased him out. So Regan orders the servants to throw him out of the gates so he can, quote, smell his way to Dover.
Jesus.
After he's let out, Cornwall collapses from his wounds, and Regan's like, okay, well, let's get you out of here. And she helps him up, and they stumble out together. And so left alone, the servants that have just witnessed this horrifying thing are like, we're going to go help him. We got to go figure out how to get Gloucester to Dover safely. So they kind of leave after him.
Mm-hmm.
Act 4. Edgar, still disguised as poor Tom, comes in talking about how things are really bad, yes, but at least they can't get any worse.
Oh.
At which point, his father wanders in, bleeding from his empty eye sockets.
Jesus Christ.
An old man who used to be Gloucester's servant is traveling with him and is trying to help guide him. But Gloucester is like, Listen, I was more blind before when I doubted my youngest son. Like, I see more clearly than I have in a really long time, and I just feel so guilty and all this stuff. And so Edgar is seeing and hearing this, and he can't believe it. And the old man tells Gloucester that there is a crazy man on the road, and talking about poor Tom. And Gloucester is like, I met a man like that last night while I was talking to King Lear, and he says there was something about that beggar that at one point reminded him of his son. And he says, as flies to wanton boys are we to the gods, they kill us for their sport. So he's basically like, little boys rip wings off flies, and the gods are just fucking with me.
Oh.
So he asks the old man if poor Tom is naked, and the old man's like, yeah, pretty naked. Then Gloucester's like, okay, can you go and get him some clothes? And the old man's like, I'll get the best clothes I can find. And the old man leaves and then brings back clothes for poor Tom to wear. And then Gloucester's like, leave me here. I'm going to pay this guy to take care of me. You go. You can't be seen with me.
Oh,
I know. So he calls out to poor Tom, and Edgar has a really hard time keeping in character of the madman, right? He's like, but he keeps lying to Gloucester longer than he needs to.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there is an emotional reason why he isn't ready to reveal himself to his father yet. But just so you know, it's weird how long he keeps up the ruse, to the point where people have speculated, like, maybe Edgar's evil.
Oh, no.
But he's definitely not, but it's a lot longer than he needs to. I think there's an emotional reason why he doesn't feel comfortable being himself around his dad again, you know?
Yeah.
Especially since his dad is now in this state. I don't know.
The reason why Edgar is here is because of Edmund, like, mm-hmm. Edmund, who's the person he trusts most in the world.
Yeah.
Next to his father.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird thing of, like, he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know. It doesn't seem like he knows at this point whether Edmund has betrayed him. He still believes that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, 100%.
So it's kind of like he's like, one of these two people is lying about their intentions.
Yeah, but now his dad doesn't have eyes. Like, you're like wandering around blind without eyeballs. You kind of get. You get my trust now, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, Edgar is having a really hard time keeping the character, but he feels he must. He says, bless thy sweet eyes, they bleed. And Gloucester is like, can you lead me someplace? I want to go in Dover. There is some cliffs, and I want to go up there. And he says, there is a cliff whose high and bending head looks fearfully in the confined deep. Bring me but to the very brim of it, and I'll repair the misery thou dost bear with something rich about me. From that place I shall no leading need. So he basically is like, I'm going to give you money, a lot of money, to lead me up to the cliffs and then leave me there. I don't need you to guide me back.
Yikes.
And Edgar says, give me thy arm, poor Tom shall lead thee. And he takes his arm, and they walk off together. Back at Gloucester's castle, Goneril and Edmund are having a sexy little moment. Do you fucking care about this? It goes from this to, it's so sad, and suddenly they're like, ooh, we're sexy and we're evil, and maybe having an affair, and everyone's like, who cares? Who cares about you? We hate you. We hope you die sad. She's in the middle of telling him that she's surprised her husband Albany hasn't arrived yet. Like, what? They have extra time together. And then a servant arrives and informs her that her husband has abandoned their cause. Albany has fucking switched sides.
He's bailed out.
He was told the French army is on its way. And when he did, he smiled.
Oh, no.
He was like, maybe Lear's terrible children are going to get what they deserve.
Shit.
He also didn't like the news of what they did to Gloucester.
Fair.
He wasn't a fan of that. So Goneril calls her husband a coward, and she realizes that she now has to rethink some of her plans. So she's like, Edmund, baby, go away. She's like, you're going to hear from me soon, okay? I need to go divorce my husband and give him back his stupid name. And then they kiss for a long time, and he says goodbye. But she's like, okay, there we go. Remember that kiss for later, my love. And he says, yours in the ranks of death, which I am sad to say, I do find that a very hot way to say goodbye.
Yours.
Yours in the ranks of death.
Hmm.
I just think that's a hot thing to say.
Pretty good.
Goneril watches him leave and basically is like, now that he's the Earl of Gloucester and he's evil, I find him wildly attractive. As soon as he leaves, Albany comes in and yells at her for how she treated her father. He says, oh, Goneril, you are not worth the dust which the rude wind blows in your face. I fear your disposition.
Shit.
And Goneril's like, oh, my God, you need to get your priorities straight. Like, she is annoyed. Their kingdom is literally about to get invaded, all right? So can you fucking buck up? You're the leader of this kingdom. You don't have to agree with the cause. You have to fight for your home, though. And as they're arguing, a servant comes in and tells them that Cornwall is dead. That stabbing that happened, it killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Albany is horrified about all this, but he is hopeful that this is a sign that justice is going to prevail at the end. So Albany's like, you know what? Good. Cornwall didn't need to be alive anymore after what he did. So like, maybe this is like a sign that good things are going to come. And Goneril is also horrified, but mostly because with her husband dead now, Regan is single and maybe she'll try to marry Edmund.
Oh, actually. No.
What the hell?
Things are not going well for our hero.
So she leaves, and Albany learns from the servant all the terrible details of Edmund's treachery and Gloucester's loyalty to King Lear. And he's like, I'm going to get vengeance for Gloucester. That was uncalled for and evil, and I'm gonna fix this. So later, Kent, the messenger, meets back up with the man that he had sent to deliver the letter to Cordelia. So remember way back, he gave all his money to like a gentleman on the road and was like, go give this letter. The gentleman's like, okay, so I gave it to her. She read it. She cried a few tears. And she said a couple times, father, sadly. And then she smiled a bit, which they were like, isn't that sweet? And I was like, no, that's scary.
Pretty terrifying.
You guys don't know women. That's when they are crying and then they start smiling. That's bad.
That's not like, oh, I'm sad, but I'm getting over it. That's like, oh, I'm sad. Oh, now I'm mad.
These men were straight up, like, she got to the part about her sisters, and then she just started smiling. And oh, they were like, God. She's always been so patient and kind. I was like, no, she has not been. Everyone's about to die. Okay. Ba-ba-ba-ba. Kent reveals that Lear is near enough now to Cordelia. He's in Dover. He's very close to where she is now. He's like, he could very easily reach out to her and be protected by her and the King of France. Like, basically, Lear is saved. And now that, you know, he knows that she's his only good daughter left and that she loves him very much, even with all that happened, like, everybody knows, like, if he reaches out to her, she would be so happy. But Lear won't even consider doing that because he's so ashamed of how he treated her, and also he has so much pride, he cannot bring himself to go there. So they're just separated right now. They're so close, and she doesn't know it. He learns that Cornwall and Albany both have military afoot. He doesn't know yet that Cornwall's dead. And then he leads the man to where Lear is, so he can take care of the king, and Kent can do some business. Act 4, scene 4. Cordelia enters with drums, colors, a doctor, gentlemen, and soldiers. She's brought everyone.
The Queen of France.
She's the Queen of France. She tells us that she's been searching for her father, but that she just missed him. She realized she has intelligence now, and she's like, damn it. We found him, and he had just gotten away. He had escaped from his caretakers and was last seen in a cornfield, as mad as the vexed sea, singing aloud. He had made a crown of like a bunch of different types of plants and flowers, and he was just like wandering off and nobody can find him. She sends 100 soldiers to search for him. And when they leave, she asks the doctor if there's any way to cure his madness. She's like, when we find him, do you think there's a way to cure this? And the doctor's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he just has to have like a long sleep and he'll be fine. Like, it's fine. This is a sleep thing. So don't worry. And she's like, oh, I really hope you're right. And he's like, I'm a doctor. Of course I'm right.
He adjusts his name tag, the Reverend Dr.
Boobs. Reverend Dr. Boobs. And he adjusts his fake mustache because he's a lady disguised as Reverend Dr. Boobs. A messenger arrives and informs her that her sister's British troops are marching towards the French army. There's some more stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
Cordelia has already deployed the French troops, not so she can have any power, of course, but so she could protect her father. She's doing this in the name of King Lear. Back at the castle, Regan has cornered Goneril's messenger, Oswald, who is trying to deliver a letter to Edmund, who isn't there. She's like, what's in the letter? And he's like, I can't tell you that. And she's like, okay, but what if you could? And he's like, I guess I would, but I can't, so I'm not gonna. She's like, mm-hmm, okay. So eventually she tells him that she and Edmund talked, and they already agreed it would make more sense for Edmund to marry her, so Goneril should maybe back off, and if you wanted to relay that message to her, you could. And she also is like, did you know that there's a reward for anyone who tracks down Gloucester and kills him? And Oswald's like, I didn't. She's like, I'm just saying it might be good for you to prove your loyalty to the cause. And he's like, I'm excited to prove my worth to you. She's like, good.
Yikes.
Meanwhile, Edgar is dressed as poor Tom, still, and he's leading blind Gloucester across an even surface. And Gloucester's like, I thought you were going to take me up the hill. And he's like, we are like going up the hill. Can't you feel it? Like, oh, I'm having a hard time. Like, aren't you having a... And he's just like pretending they're going up a hill and like gaslighting him a bunch. And then he says, every time Gloucester's like, well, we're supposed to be near the sea. I can't hear it. And Edgar's like, your other senses are probably failing you. Like, I can hear it. I can smell it. Like, it's amazing. And Gloucester's like, oh no, maybe they are. And so Gloucester remarks that Edgar is speaking much better than he was before. He's like, you're not talking weird again. And Edgar's like, you're much deceived. In nothing am I changed but in my garments. But Gloucester's like, no, you're better spoken now. You sound good. And at this point, Edgar's like, okay, stand still. We're here. He says, how fearful and dizzy 'tis to cast one's eyes so low. And he's like making this big speech about how he's looking down off this massive cliff and how there are fishermen walking on the beach below and there are people gathering like minerals and stuff. And he's like, they look as small as mice and oh, the waves are beautiful. And he's describing this like fake scene. And he says, I'll look no more lest my brain turn and the deficient sight topple down headlong. He's like, we're so high up. I'm afraid of looking down because I'm going to get dizzy and fall. And Gloucester's like, can you put me where you're standing right now? And he's like, okay. And then he gives poor Tom his purse, like all of his money. And he's like, I don't need this anymore. So you can go now. And Edgar walks a little bit away. And the old man looks up and asks the gods to witness his final moments. And then he jumps. But he falls on his face.
Because he wasn't on a cliff.
Because he wasn't on a cliff. Edgar done tricked him.
Good trick, Edgar.
So Edgar, meanwhile, is watching this and he's like, this is the saddest moment of my whole life. I just don't know. And then when his father like falls on his face, he's like, oh my God, what if he died? He fell like 5 feet, but like that's a lot for this old man. And he's been through so much. So he rushes to his side and he's like, are you okay? And Gloucester kind of like comes to and he's like, did I jump? And Edgar is like, you sure did, my lord.
No.
He puts on a different accent. And he's like, you did jump. And wow. And you miraculously survived the fall. And he helps Gloucester up. And he's like, who led you to that cliff? And Gloucester's like, oh, poor Tom did. And he kind of describes him. And Edgar's like, I saw that beast. His eyes were 2 full moons. He had 1,000 noses. Horns whelked and waved like the enraged sea. And he's like, there was a demon up there leading you. It wasn't poor Tom. It was a demon. And he's like, and guess what? The God saved you because you're so special and your life is worth so much that like they saved you. So you probably shouldn't do that again. You were probably thinking about dying by suicide because a demon was leading you. But like you're safe now and you can stop thinking that. Edgar's trying his best.
He's being wacky.
Edgar is doing some antics in a very serious moment. And Gloucester's like, oh, well, that makes sense. I guess I won't.
Oh, no.
At this point, King Lear enters the stage. He is talking to himself and he's saying, no, they cannot touch me for coining. I am the king himself. Coining, I believe in this, is referencing putting the coins on the eyes of a dead person.
Mm.
He is wearing, basically in the plays, usually he's wearing just like a shift, like a dirty shift. Mm-hmm. And he has a crown of wildflowers around his head. And that's like just the juxtaposition of the first time you saw King Lear. He was dressed in full royal garments and he had like a king's crown on his head. Mm-hmm. And now he's literally woven himself like weeds and wildflowers to wear on his head. So it's a symbol of his deteriorating mind.
Mm-hmm.
He's chattering on and on, some of it nonsense and some really bitter and angry. He's like going in and out of kind of remembering what happened to him and just like saying weird words and things that make no sense. He keeps talking about how his daughters flattered him and how everyone in his court always told him whatever he wanted to hear. He says, they told me I was everything. 'Tis a lie. I am not ague-proof. Ague-proof means immune to fevers and resistant to sickness. That's a Shakespeare word.
Mm-hmm.
His title and his power, at this point, he's realizing, are just social constructs. They're not real. So more of this. He's realizing how mortal and insignificant he is in the world. Gloucester recognizes Lear's voice, and he gets really emotional, and he's like, is that Lear? Why is he out here? And he's, like, really upset. And he's like, do you remember me, King Lear? Do you remember who I am? And Lear says, I remember thine eyes well enough.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And then he says, do thy worst, blind Cupid, I'll not love. So traditionally Cupid was seen as a blind, like with a blindfold on and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And he obviously doesn't recognize Gloucester and he's spewing more nonsense. Edgar and Gloucester are horrified at what's become of Lear. They're both like, what the fuck? They're both doing their own asides like, oh, guys, this is bad. Uh-oh. Edgar remarks that if he hadn't seen it for himself, he would not have believed this was happening. And Lear keeps ranting about justice and there's no such thing. And he's talking about like judges are no different than thieves and how hypocritical it is that the punishment for sex workers is like to whip their backs when like half the people who are doing the whipping have like paid sex workers. Like that's really yeah. fucked up. Like sex workers only have to be in that position because we have set up a society where that's their only way to take care of themselves. And then we punish them for it, but still use them. Like what the fuck is wrong with us? Like,
King Lear's getting woke.
King Lear got woke. At this point, Gloucester begins to cry. And as he starts crying, Lear like looks at him and wakes up for a second. And he's like, hey, no. No, of course I recognize you. I know who you are. You're Gloucester. And he kind of walks up like, whoa, why are you crying? And he says, like, it's okay to cry. We came into this world crying. And then when men get to a certain age, we see the world for what it is. And we can cry again because it sucks. And then as Gloucester's like, okay, like relieved, Lear slips back into madness. And he's like, I like your hat. And Gloucester's like,
no,
I'm not wearing a hat.
Oh, no.
At this point, a gentleman and attendant come up that we've never seen before. And the gentleman tells the servant, lay hand upon him, basically grab Lear. And he's like, your daughter sent me here.
Which one?
Which daughter? At first, Lear is like, so I guess I'm a prisoner. And then he looks at the guy who's about to touch him and he's like, if you can catch me. And he like runs away, like, giggling like a child. And the attendants are like, ah! And they all like go chasing after him. And the gentleman is like, oh my God. So he informs Edgar. He's like, we were sent by Cordelia, the Queen of France. And she has sent the French army and it's moving on Britain. And we need to get King Lear back to her so that physicians can look at him. So the man leaves and Gloucester prays out loud to the gods to let him die. So he won't consider taking his own life again because this is getting too much and he wants to be strong, but that interaction with Lear really, really upset him. He feels hopeless. At this point, Edgar says, well, pray you, father. And Gloucester's like, who are you? And Edgar says, a most poor man, made tame to fortune's blow. Give me your hand. I'll lead you to some biting. So he's like, nobody, let's go. He's like, okay. As they're about to leave, Oswald, Goneril's messenger, enters and draws his sword. He's like, I'm here to prove myself by killing you. And Edgar's like, okay, but I'm a better swordsman. So he fucking kills him.
Shit.
Yeah. As he's dying, Oswald gives Edgar, who's, again, still in disguise, he gives him two letters to Edmund from Goneril and to Edmund from Regan. Both the sisters have written him letters. And he's like, will you deliver these for me? I know you killed me, but, like, will you do this? And Edgar's like, okay. And then he dies and he's like, open, read. Edgar reads them.
Thinking, and he's like, is that possible? I don't think that's like anatomically possible. That's gross.
Ew, no. Edgar reads them, thinking they may have important information for the battles to come. And the first one is from Goneril. And in that letter, Goneril asks Edmund to kill her husband so they can be together. And he's like, oh, is my brother the bad guy?
Uh-oh.
Oh, fuck. So now he has proof that Goneril is treacherous, that Edmund has betrayed him. All of this stuff is coming together. Meanwhile, Cordelia is with her father, finally. He has been sleeping for a while, and he's under the care of the doctor that she's brought with her. They decide that it's time to wake him up, and they start to play music for him so he won't be scared.
Oh, I know.
She starts kissing his brow, and she's like, I'm really sorry. Your daughters were so terrible to you. Like, none of this should have ever happened. Like, I'm so sorry. You didn't deserve this. And she's like, I can't believe they sent you out into a storm by yourself. You're so old and you're sick. And obviously you needed somebody to take care of you. Like, I wouldn't. And then she says, mine enemy's dog, though he had bit me, should have stood the night against my fire. She's like, I would not have treated my enemy's dog like this.
Yeah.
Lear starts to wake up and she's like, doctor, come here. You need to talk to him because, you know, she's worried. And the doctor's like, no, you keep talking to him. Like, he needs you to be there. And so Lear wakes up. And at first, he thinks he's dead. He's like, you were wrong to take me out of the grave. I'm in hell. And my tears feel like molten lead. Don't wake me up. Cordelia is like, do you know me? And he says, "You are a spirit, I know. Where did you die?" And she is like talking to him, and slowly, very slowly, he starts to recognize her. And he says, "Do not laugh at me, for as I am a man, I think this lady to be my child Cordelia." And she bursts into tears and says, "And so I am. I am." Ugh. Whew. This play is going to get you. Lear says, "Be your tears wet? Yes, Faith, I pray, weep not. If you have poison for me, I will drink it. I know you do not love me, for your sisters have, as I do remember, done me wrong. You have some cause. They have not." He's like, "You can hate me, and that's okay. But your sisters have no reason to hate me." Spoiled brats. He keeps asking for her forgiveness, and she helps him walk off stage so they can continue this like touching reunion alone. She does this a lot. They reference it, and she does it on stage. Whenever she's about to have a very emotional moment, she'll get just enough, and then she'll walk off stage to be alone. I think it's a very clear indication of Cordelia's personality, because she said from the beginning she's pretty shy and reserved. Mm-hmm. Like, she'll show a little emotion and then be like, "I need to be alone. I have to process this somewhere else." And she does the same thing with her dad, where she's like, "We don't need to do this in front of people." It's just, like, a really cool, nuanced, like, theater character that you don't see a whole lot, you know?
Yeah, it's very cool to see a character who is, like, so genuine that they
aren't playing to the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's wild. Back with Edmund, he and Regan are talking. She is asking him if he slept with her sister, and he's like, "No." "Your sister? Who? Gonorrhea? Not me." Regan is in the middle of ordering him to stay out of Goneril's bed when Goneril and Albany, her husband, walk in. Albany tells everyone that he fucking hates them, and he agrees with France for wanting to obliterate them. But also, he's their ruler, so he has to defend his country, so he's gonna. "But you guys are all in hot water." "I'm mad at everyone in this room." Goneril is like, "Get over it already. Oh my god, you're on our side. Like, fucking stop it." Then she and Regan leave with Edmund because neither of them trust the other one to be alone with him, and the second he starts to leave, they're like, "Okay." And they, like, they don't trust each other anymore. And he's like, and everything's going according to plan.
Damn.
Edgar, dressed as a peasant, enters as they're leaving, and he pulls Albany aside before he can follow them. And he hands him the letter from Goneril planning his death. And he's like, "This is for you. Please read it before the battle." "Thank you." And then he runs off without revealing his identity. But he says, "When time shall serve, let but the herald cry, and I'll appear again." And he leaves. And Albany's like, "What does that mean? Who are you?"
"Who's Harold?"
"Do we have a Harold on staff? Jones?" Edgar still hasn't revealed his identity to Gloucester. Okay, but he's decided to fight with Cordelia and the French army. He's starting to figure out where he should go in this battle. He hides his father behind a tree, and he tells him to stay there. And then when he's safe, Edgar will come back and tell him how the battle went. He's like, "Don't worry, just stay here, away from all the fighting." But then he comes back in after a little while. Like, on stage, Gloucester's, like, by himself, like, blind and standing behind a tree. And then Edgar comes running back, and he's like, "We have to go." Oops. And he takes Gloucester's hand, and he says, "King Lear lost, and Lear and Cordelia were captured by Edmund's army."
Oof.
Edmund has Cordelia and Lear as prisoners, and Cordelia is demanding to see her sisters. Lear, however, has no interest. He's like, "I'm an old man. I don't even care about politics." And then he takes Cordelia's hand. He's like, "As long as I'm with you, I am fine and I am safe." And she's like, "That's great. We need to talk to them, though." "It's okay. I'll do it." Edmund orders the guards to take them away, and then he tells the captain of his guard that either the man can execute them both and get a promotion, or he can find a new job. Now, remember, he has to do this because he's not the king. He's not the ruler of this country. He's an earl. He's trying to get rid of them before Albany can pardon them.
Mm.
Meaning he has to do this as fast as possible so that nobody can take it back. Albany, Regan, and Goneril come in to celebrate their victory. And Albany tells Edmund to hand Lear and Cordelia over him. And he's like, "No, can't do it." Regan is like, "Well, I don't feel very good." And everybody ignores her.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Edmund tells Albany that Lear looked really pitiful, and he's like, "I had to send him away with a guard so that no one would see him and then rebel because they feel sorry for him. Plus, it's not appropriate to deal with this now. So many people are, like, burying their dead and, like, dealing with battle wounds and stuff, you know?" And Albany's getting pissed. He's like, "Did you just tell me no? You guys heard that, right? You're an earl. You fucking work for me, bitch."
Damn.
Yeah. He's like, I'm technically the king here. So he tells Edmund that he is not his brother. He is his subordinate. He doesn't get to refuse him. At this point, Regan steps in and is like, you're out of line, Albany. She says, Edmund has every right to do what he wants because he's my future husband, which would make him equal king. Of course, Goneril is like, what? And Albany's like, why are you mad? We're married. And Edmund is like, hey, can you fucking butt out and let them fight? And Albany is like, Albany at this point calls him half-blooded, which is a dig at him being illegitimate. And Regan is like, fight him, honey. Kill him. Get him, Edmund. And Albany is like, I'm over this. He's like, first of all, guards, arrest Goneril and Edmund. They were plotting to kill me behind my back. I have the letter. I've got the proof. I know everything. He reveals the letter, proving treason, and he orders the trumpet to sound 3 times. If no one steps forward on the 3rd call of the herald, Albany will fight Edmund in a duel himself. So this is kind of like, I guess this is a standard procedure. Once again, Regan's like, I feel sick. At which point...
Shut up, Regan.
At which point, Goneril turns to the audience and says, if not, I'll never trust medicine. Basically saying, yeah, I poisoned her. If she didn't feel sick, it'd be weird.
Damn.
Regan, at this point, gets so sick that she's, like, doubled over, and she's rushed out of the room to go to Albany's tent so the doctors can look at her. So the trumpet sounds 3 times, and on the 3rd time, Edgar rushes in and says that he'd like to take the challenge to duel Edmund himself. Everyone's looking at him, and they're like, who are you? Because he's still in disguise. But he's like, you don't need to know who I am, but here are all of your crimes. And he lists all of Edmund's crimes. And he calls Edmund a most toad-spotted traitor.
Damn.
Anybody on the Discord want to name themselves toad-spotted traitor? You can.
Pretty good.
Edmund accepts, and after a short fight, Edgar wounds him and he falls down. Goneril starts freaking out, and Albany tries to confront her about her letter, but she runs off stage and a soldier follows her out. Okay.
To murder her?
Just to make sure that she doesn't run away.
Okay.
I'm almost done. Edmund admits to all of his crimes. At this point, he's dying, so he starts to, like, just, like, confess. And he asks the identity of the man who killed him. And at this point, Edgar reveals who he is. He, like, wipes his face.
He pulls off his fake mustache that he borrowed from the Reverend Dr. Boobs.
Me the whole time! Also, there's a lady doctor back there. We gotta get a TV show about her. He tells them that about 30 minutes ago, he had revealed who he was to his father, finally, and the shock and joy was too much for Gloucester, and he had died of a heart attack.
Aww.
Which is probably also the reason why he wasn't telling him in the stress of the moment.
Yeah.
Because he was afraid of it overexciting him. So at this point, a gentleman enters holding a bloody knife.
Oh.
And he tells him that Goneril confessed to poisoning Regan, and then she stabbed herself in the heart offstage.
Oh.
Yeah. Everybody's dying. Don't worry, everyone's gonna be dead.
Tying up loose ends.
They're like, don't worry about this. Shakespeare's like, and scratch, 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 just crossing names off his list. Edmund admits to playing the sisters against each other, and then he does his only good thing that he's gonna do in this whole show. He tells them that he had ordered the captain of the guard to execute Lear and Cordelia. So they know that Cordelia is about to be hanged, and someone needs to rush to try and stop it. Edgar runs off. And Edmund is carried out, and everyone waits tensely, praying that Edgar is going to get there in time. But the first thing they hear is Lear howling. He literally says, howl, howl, howl. But it's like an old man screaming. Like, Derek Jacobi did a guttural scream that literally, like, the whole audience just, like, stopped breathing. He enters, and he's carrying Cordelia's body in his arms. He says, oh, you are men of stones. Had I your tongues and eyes, I'd use them so that heaven's vault should crack. She's gone forever. I know when one is dead and when one lives. She's dead as earth. Lend me a looking glass. If that her breath will mist or stain the stone, why then she lives. So Lear is crying like a child. He can't grasp death or life at this point. He keeps going back and forth. He keeps asking for people to check her breath. And he's like, he seems to know deep down that Cordelia is dead, but he keeps saying, Cordelia, Cordelia, stay a little. Ha, what is it thou sayest? Her voice was ever soft, gentle, and low, an excellent thing in woman. I killed the slave that was a hanging thee. And then Edgar says, like, it's true. That guy hung Cordelia and Lear fucking killed him.
Shit.
And then cut her down. So Kent is there at this point, his messenger, his loyal friend, and he's like, hey, Lear, listen, and he's trying to talk to him, and he's trying to, like, tell him what was happening, and Albany is like, Lear, you can be king now, it's okay, you can have everything back, but Lear is still talking to Cordelia's body, and he's trying to grasp her death, and he says, and my poor fool is hanged. Oh, they hung his fool. Why did they catch that before?
Oh, no.
No. He says, and my poor fool is hanged. No, no, no life? Why should a dog, a horse, a rat have life, and thou no breath at all? Thou, it come no more. Never, 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 never. Pray you undo this button. Thank you, sir. Do you see this? Look on her. Look, her lips. Look there, look there. So he's like, well, she's still alive. I know she's still alive. And then he's just like, but how come there are rats alive? How come rats are allowed to be alive? That's what he keeps saying. And with this, Lear dies.
Ugh.
Edgar thinks he's fainted. He, like, falls over, and he's like, we gotta wake him up. And as he's, like, trying to wake him up, it becomes clear that he's dead. And Albany's like, Edgar, you and Kent, because Kent was very loyal and helped orchestrate this, he's like, you guys could probably rule the kingdom together. I don't want it. And Kent is like, yeah, I'm gonna go follow Lear. And then he leaves. So I think Kent is about to go kill himself.
What?
Yeah. Anyway, that's just a random thing. Kent to me didn't need to be as big a character as he is, but he has a really wild last line. And Edgar ends the play with this last line. The weight of this sad time we must obey. Speak what we feel, not what we ought to say. The oldest hath borne most. We that are young shall never see so much, nor live so long. So basically, he vows to never forget how awful this was and never let history forget this. And he says, Lear and Gloucester suffered so much, and the younger generation needs to not let history repeat itself. So he's like, we're not, this isn't going to happen again.
And that'd be wild if it did.
It'd be wild. And that is King Lear.
Holy shit.
It was long.
It was a bummer. It was really good though.
Yeah. So the way this should be played, this play is overplayed a lot, you know, where people are always trying to tackle this. A lot of times people will call it Mount Lear because it's such a hard play to put on. The way it should be played and the way that it is when it's done well is that clearly from the beginning, Lear has been showing signs of dementia, which I think is also when he blows up on Cordelia, that to me, with Cordelia and how she was raised and also what she's come to expect from him and the way everybody's shocked, that seems so out of character. But an early sign of dementia is massive mood swings, you know, and I just think that if you're playing it correctly, that's what should be coming across, is like you miss the signs at first because you don't know him well enough. But as you start to get onto it, you're like, oh, shit, the signs were there.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, just I've never cried so hard in anything in my life. I don't think I cried my eyes out. I did want to show you Ian McKellen, the pictures of Ian McKellen playing Lear with Cordelia. Also,
whole hog.
I want to show you Ian McKellen's full penis. Is that going to make you more or less sad? What
probably
do you think?
Probably more.
What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah. King Lear.
Devastating. Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, in the like late aughts towards 2010 and stuff like that, there were a bunch of fantasy young adult novels coming out, and they were all like adjectives or adverbs. Like beastly or like, you know, like all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
For a really long time, I thought that the title King Lear was
like, King Lear.
Yeah. King Lear than thou kind of thing.
Yeah. There is a film. It's a film of King Lear with Ian McKellen. You can actually watch this. It's on PBS. But here, I wanted to show you how realistic the stuff is, but this is.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's a picture of Lear and Gloucester. And Lear, first of all, Sir Ian McKellen, he has a tie wrapped around his head, and he's wearing like psychedelic sunglasses. And he's got like a pile of like wilting flowers in his lap, and he's got a t-shirt and suspenders, or a tank top and suspenders and jeans and just his socks.
Yeah.
And he's like gesturing at this guy. And then Gloucester is next to him, just wearing like normal clothes, and his eyes are just like black holes, and there's just blood smeared all over his face and down the front of his shirt. It's pretty goddamn horrifying.
It's realistic.
Yeah.
They do that in real time. It's very upsetting.
Wild. A lot of things that
happened in that felt very Shakespearean, where it was like, oh, like these games of intrigue and like gear is moving and like people, like the unintended consequences of the political choices that people make and stuff
the
like
disguises.
That.
There's two characters in full disguise.
Yeah. And so, like, to me, the part of this play that was weird is the fact that France loses the battle. Like, Cordelia and Lear lose.
Yeah.
That feels... That was very unexpected. And also, if they hadn't lost, everything would have been kind of fine.
Okay, you know? So actually, it's weird that you said that. The original ending... Or not the original. I think this is the original ending. But originally, when they would put this on in England, this play did have a happy ending. But it wasn't until... relatively recently that Shakespeare became like Shakespeare to British people and they stopped changing his endings. So this is the original ending. This is also high. They keep saying he borrowed a lot of the stuff from King Lear, L-I-L-E-I-R. Mm-hmm. It's a play that's just this. I was like, sure. Oh, cool.
Okay.
That's not borrowing Shakespeare, but okay. So yeah, and it's loosely based off a bunch of stuff. But yeah, a lot of times when they put on this play in the past, they would have a happy ending because people didn't want to see an old man who was senile hold his dead child and like scream and not understand the concept of death.
Yeah, that's the moment when, you know, people categorize Shakespeare's plays into tragedies and comedies. And that's the moment where it could have been a comedy.
Yeah.
Even with as dark as it was, where it's like, if they had wanted to be like, okay, great, now, like, he and his daughter get to rule the kingdom together, like, they take back their lands.
You know, he's going to be taken care of in sickness, you know, because it's clear that he's never going to come back to what he was before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
It was the concept of, you know, there's an ache... watching your parents get old, you know, just in general, just as you get older, knowing that your parents are going to die is like a huge, weird ache. You know, it doesn't really go away. But specifically for me, seeing men lose their like
cognitive
agency
abilities.
And their cognitive abilities and go through dementia, for whatever reason, that fucking hits me. And I don't know why that is. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of unfair that it hits me more than with women. But I guess with women, I just assume women can take care of themselves. And I don't always assume that older men can. Just seeing like an older man act like a baby is very upsetting.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I think it's also, I mean, again, this is like gender essentialist in a lot of ways, but there are a lot of times where women are depicted as, you know, at any age as being very emotional and crying and like feeling insecure and like losing sense of themselves. Yeah. But in most media, men do not.
Yeah.
Like they are
not emotional.
It's the
James Bond of it all. Like they are capable and they're in charge and
So seeing
you don't see them weak.
Yeah. Seeing an older man like cry like a baby is weird in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, especially like somebody like King Lear, who was so wealthy and powerful, and you see him in that position at the beginning of the play. Yeah, it's a rough turn. Yeah. Yep. Anyway, I put in the show notes, I put a link to Signs of Dementia. So if you want to give that a read, happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday.
Max up, bring us up with the tale of Macbeth. Okay, Max.
Okay, Janie. Wow, that was a bummer. King Lear.
Max and I have decided, since my story was 2 hours long and Max's story is going to be about an hour and a half, that we're going to do ourselves and your ears a favor and split them up into two separate episodes. So I'm ending there on that bummer of a note. I hope you liked it. Happy birthday to me. Go cry. Go call your dad. Say hi. I called my dad the other day. I'm just now realizing that's why.
Oh, no.
Okay. Anyway, I'm having an existential crisis. Me and Shakespeare, we're two of the same.
Mm-hmm.
We're both dreading time.
Mortality, morality, the endless march of... the drudgery that leads us from one day to the next.
Oh my god, okay, little Shakespeare.
It's me, little Shakespeare.
Little Shakespeare, get out of here.
No!
Anyway, he's going to sit over there for a little bit. Little Shakespeare is invading. So with that, though, we're going to go ahead and head out today, and we're going to have a wonderful week. Max and I are going to go see Hozier and Noah Kahan in like 1 week. Max, are you ready? I'm not ready.
No.
No, we have too much to do, and who's going to take care of our pets? You know what? We'll figure it out when we figure
it out. We'll figure it out.
But if you want to talk about King Lear with us, you absolutely can anytime you want. You can email us at sortofthestory@gmail.com, or you can see some of the pictures that I talked about today of Ian McKellen in his movie, which you can watch on PBS. I don't know. Can you watch it on PBS?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you can look for it. Google's free.
I'll put it. Why don't you just fucking Google it, please?
I'll put it in the show notes as well. But I'm going to put up pictures of that on the Instagram, and you can always chat with us in our DMs or in our comments. I like reading all of the messages, so hang out with us for a little bit. You can join our Discord for $3 a month by joining our Patreon. You can also up that to $7 a month and get some extra bonus episodes, which are pretty cool. I've heard from sources that the two girls who could do those bonus episodes are pretty hot. So, you know, just you have that to look forward to. I think you can tell by the quality of their voices that they're attractive. And yeah, is there anything else? Oh, go to our website, www.sortofthestory.com, and rate and review this podcast. 5 stars, please. Leave us a silly little message. Why? Because it's my birthday, and that's what I want.
She's just the birthday boy.
I'm the birthday boy. You wouldn't review the birthday boy with 4 stars, would you?
5 stars only for the birthday boy.
5 stars only. Thank you. Okay, and that's about it. Max, anything to add?
Not till next week, when I tell Macbeth.
Yeah. Little Shakespeare, anything to add?
Fie upon your eyes!
Oh my God.
The stars curse your name!
It's too soon for eyeball jokes, Little Shakespeare, okay? You wrote some fucked up eyeball stuff, and now you're gonna have to live with it! Oh my God, he's so mischievous. We're gonna get out of here and go spank him.
We gotta go discipline Little Shakespeare.
Little Shakespeare has gotta go to the corner and think about what he did. So, we'll see you guys next week. Goodbye!
Bye!
And Little Shakespeare, anything you want to say?
Go fuck yourself!
Well, bye. My favorite thing. Well, no, I guess it's not my favorite thing. I'm just used to saying that.
What is your favorite
thing? An annoying thing.
No, what's your favorite thing?
My favorite thing? It's probably summer.
Wow.
And tied with Max.
Okay.
Feel better?
A little.
Summer is my favorite thing until we go for a walk, and then I legitimately hate him. Because he's bad at walking. He stops and sniffs every single flower. But when I go for a walk, it's to, like, get out a lot of pent-out rage. And so I'm, like, dragging him along, like, we're running! I don't do it often, but when I do, I need to be moving so fast. And Summer is like, we passed by some daisies that I didn't poop on.
What's something that you think is annoying?
Oh, it's not annoying either. I can't figure out the right way. I guess it's just the thing that happens.
Tell me the thing and then we can analyze it.
Whenever we introduce the podcast, we both go, hello! Like as loud as we can. And it peaks so high, but then we go back to normal immediately. And it's like 145 episodes in. That's how many we've published on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them, you can hear, hello!
I'm Max and I'm Janie.
We should do it really quietly this time just for fun.
Hello.
Hello. And welcome.
Welcome.
I see. I like it loud because it sets the like an energetic tone, but it's every single one. It peaks so hard on the intro because we're like, we're here!
Hey guys, we don't want to sneak up on you.
And I'm like watching both of our little tracks on this and it's like both of us are like just so far out, it's like we're fucking screaming at them. And you know what, we are and we hope and you're screaming with us. Guys, do you ever say hello with us?
You could. Do you ever do the whole intro with us? Oh. You're like, hello and welcome to Sort of the Story. My name's Janie and I'm Max. This is the podcast where we tell each other stories, like fairy tales and folk tales and mythology.
The
and
problem
also,
is
you are here.
That is the intro. We have really fine-tuned the fact that there is, in fact, an intro with words. But we never get that right for some reason. So if you're trying to say it along with us, you're going to say it right and we're going to say it wrong. And it's rude of you to point that out.
Listen, we're not saying it wrong. We're just quirky.
We're quirky.
We like to keep things fresh.
And cool.